Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Break the Cycle. Me, your host, Joshua Smith. Hope everyone's having a wonderful Tuesday night. For you guys who didn't see last night's show, this will be my last show for the week. I leave for Boston at like, I think my flight leaves at 6 a.m. in the morning, so I got to get up at like 4 a.m. And head out to Boston. I'll be in Boston tomorrow through Sunday night. And then Sunday night, I have like a 12 or some odd crazy hour layover in Baltimore, Maryland. So I'll be with the Boston Libertarian people over the week, and then for that one evening, I'll be hanging out with some Maryland and more specifically Baltimore Libertarians. I think they planned on hanging out, hopefully Otto, Dassing, and some of these guys, man, really cool people. So if you're in either of those areas, come say hi. I'll be in Boston for the Libertarian National Committee meeting Saturday and Sunday during the day, but the rest of the time is pretty much free and open time. So I'm really excited to see some of you guys. I know I'll be staying with my good friend Toad from the Tower Power Hour. He lives right outside of Boston, so that's going to be cool. So come hang out, man. It's going to be a lot of fun. Guys, we've got a great show for you tonight. Of course, let's start off with some sponsors. We got toplofts.com, the man, the myth, the legend, my good friend and partner on Break the Cycle, where you can get this great sunset synthwave dark camo custom Break the Cycle hoodie for a 10% off discount by using BTC at checkout. Or you can join the Patreon, subscribe star, or become a member of this here YouTube channel under all my videos by hitting the join link, where you can get into a private Discord server and get all Top Lobster's new gear up to 2 weeks before it goes to the general public at like a 30% discount. Deep discount, man. Totally worth it. If you guys are one of the lower paid tier members on the Patreon or subscribe star, it really pays for itself if you're buying new Top Lobster gear. Good stuff. I promise you won't be disappointed. And of course, executive producers of the show, anthemplanning.com, for all your emergency and crisis planning needs. Check them out today. See what they can do for your business, home, or personal life. They're doing a wonderful job that the government has historically sucked at, much cheaper and much more efficiently. Seriously, if you guys own a business, go check it out. As soon as you're done with this, as soon as you're done becoming a member of the channel, watching the members only stream, following the full live stream, then you guys can go check out Anthem Planning. And if you own a business, I promise you there's something they can do for you. Won't be let down. Absolutely not. They're doing some work with some of my other listeners already, and they're very, very happy. So check them out. Guys, we've got a great show for you tonight. I'm very excited. I didn't really know much about our guest tonight. I just have been following him on Twitter for quite some time. I'm a huge fan. He's known as the Bob Ross of Gun Twitter. He is the trap star, Mr. Citizen Hush. How you doing tonight, sir?
Hey, what's going on, man? Thanks for having me.
Of course, dude. Thank you for coming on, man. You didn't big time me. I was surprised. Like, man, he's got 100,000 followers on Twitter. He's gonna big time me. Didn't do it.
No, the Twitter algorithm has not been kind to me since January 6th or whenever that happened.
Dude, it's crazy.
I always compare notes with some of the other guys, and we're always just feeling, oh, they let us out. They let us out for like 30 days where we're getting like 5,000 likes and retweets pretty regularly. And then 9 months back in the gulag.
Yeah. It's so weird. It's weird to me too. Cause you know, I just got my Twitter account taken away from me. I had 20,000 followers, and I was like, you know, I've been on Twitter for 5 years, and I've been building that following for 5 years. And I was like, yeah, we're doing good. You know, the show's going good. And then they just swept it all, you know, just took the wind out of my sales. Now I have like 3,700 followers on Twitter on my new page, and that page is being deboosted. Like my, mm-hmm. my new page, it only has 3,700 people are like, dude, I've been following you for weeks, and this is the first post I've seen of yours. I'm like, I post like 30 times a day, dude.
Crazy. Yeah. I think we were supposed to do this show, back in October, and I tore my ankle tendon. And, when I was digging through my DMs, trying to find you to let you know that I was going to have to delay again. And I was like, why can't I find this guy?
Oh geez. Yeah. I was gone, bro. I was gone. Yeah. I remember I was going to do the show with you, and then you said you tore your foot up, and I was like, this guy just made that up. He doesn't want to come on the show. I get it. It's okay, man. No, no.
I was definitely in a boot.
Yeah. It was rough, dude. What happened, bro? What'd you do?
I was out hunting hogs, and being a dumbass, I was holding a thermal monocular and walking, and tripped off a trail and turned my foot about 90 degrees inwards the way it's not supposed to turn. Yeah. And it was a level 2 tear, but oof. I'm in physical therapy now. So I'm able to walk without the boot now.
Well, I get it, man. I did MMA on and off for a long time. And then, I never took a fight. I wasn't like a fighter. I just trained MMA. I did jujitsu and Muay Thai, and I did judo for a long time, and boxing. And, I was actually going to take a fight in my very early 30s, and I was training for this fight,
And I was at a gym in Portland, Oregon, and I was doing some bag work, and a bigger name fighter from the area came in, and I was like, oh, I'm going to show off, you know? So I started like going hard on this bag, and I like jumped for some reason and then threw a kick and turned my foot, like the bottom of my foot was looking up at me.
Up.
And I couldn't walk. I like literally could not walk for 2 weeks at all. It was bad, dude. Really fucked up. So I get it, man. I know how it goes.
Yeah, thankfully I never had any tendon or ligament damage during my time fighting. I've had two boxer's fractures in both hands.
Oh, yeah.
And I probably have no cartilage left in my left knee.
That's how both my knees are, dude. That's how both, and that's from, you know, that's from wrestling and playing football too. I mean, I wrestled for 14 years before I ever did any MMA at all. And I mean, from the time I was 4 to I was 18, my mom had me in wrestling, and it never ended. I mean, it was literally my whole childhood. And so you don't think about it when you're doing that shit as a young kid. You're like, my knees are hurting now. I'm almost 40. I'm like, what the fuck? And, you know, I'm talking to the doctor. He's like, you know, you're probably going to need a knee replacement. And I'm like, when? He's like, in your 50s? I'm like, Jesus, dude, seriously? In my 50s? Give me a break, man. But there's some days that are bad, dude, especially now that I live in Iowa and it's so cold, you know, it's rough.
Yeah. Yeah. When I lived in the DC area, that's what got me. As soon as it dropped below 50, not happening.
Yeah. We get like negative 50. You know what I mean, dude? It's rough here. It's bad.
Yeah. My ocean Mexican blood's not cut out for that weather.
I feel you, dude. I feel you. I grew up in California. This is all new to me. I'm going into my second winter in Iowa, and we've already had a couple of like 20 degree days, and I'm just like, fuck, dude, this is going to be rough again. You got to pull out the snow blower, all that shit, dude. It's a lot of work living in the Midwest, man, but it's cheap. It's really, really fucking cheap, dude. Like I'm talking like 1/5 the cost of living that California was.
Oh, I believe it. Yeah. I believe it.
So, all right, man. Well, let's talk a little bit about your journey. We talked a little bit before the show. You said you're kind of an anarchist. I'm sure you went through a Lulbert phase. We'll get into that a little bit, but why don't you tell me your journey to liberty and anarchism, man?
Yeah, it was actually through like economics primarily, like Austrian economics. That was kind of the gateway drug. Yeah. Oh, Amherst. Yeah, that was kind of the gateway drug into everything. Probably around the financial crisis. I was like, the world was, I don't know if you remember 2007, 2008.
But, oh,
like,
yeah.
The world was ending. And I was like, I wonder why. And my dad was a trader. And so he was able to explain some of it. But that kind of sent me down through like the Chicago school and then eventually Austrian school. And really all I gave a shit about was economics. Sure. And I actually thought like social issues are a distraction. Like economics is the only thing that matters. And that was a decade ago. I ended up going to grad school for economics and landed at the Cato Institute, like we were talking about, in an internship.
Oh, boy.
And
oh, boy.
Six months on K Street and Capitol Hill. That was all I needed to be like, this is not for me. Fuck y'all. I'm going to go make money.
Right.
And I never looked back, to be honest with you.
So I mean, you know, you're obviously pretty anti-politics then at this point. Would you call yourself anti-politics? I mean, is that your thing?
I would say I am actively anti-politics. Sure.
why the fuck would you get involved with Cato, though? You're like, I like Austrian economics. Let's go to the place where they talk shit about Austrian economists all the time.
I was in grad school in the DC metro, and like that was the only thing I could find. Oh, and I didn't really know who they were, and I worked there. I met a lot of really good people there, and some people that I'm still friends with today.
Sure.
But yeah, it's a not I don't really follow them anymore these days. I don't really follow anyone in that world, in the political policy world.
Yeah,
sure. Exactly. Like I'm definitely more interested in people who are doing shit with their lives versus arguing with people on the internet.
Right. Yeah, it's funny to me. I you know, I talk so much shit about Cato and Reason. But there are some people that I like at Cato and Reason too. I mean, there are, you know, and Corey DeAngelis, like I said before the show, I've had Corey on the show. I think his work in school choice is probably some of the most significant libertarian work in my lifetime. He really has pushed the school choice Overton window in this country personally, you know. So you can't trash everybody, you know. It's bad to generalize everyone.
Yeah, I you mentioned this term Lulbert. I've never heard that term up until maybe September. Sure. I think September was the first time I ever heard that term. And I don't know that. We always just called them Beltway libertarians.
Right.
And I guess there's like another schism in the church.
Well, so there's a lot of the Lulbert thing. It's funny because Lulbert's just kind of passed around as this insult for a lot of different kinds of libertarians, not just the party like blue pill beltway libertarians, but you know, some of the really, really principled libertarians are even getting called Lulberts now because they refuse to cede any ground on the fact that maybe we might have to use some other means to get out of this COVID thing, or, you know what I mean? And I get that. I understand, because in my heart, you know, like I said before the show, I'm an anarcho-capitalist, but I don't really use the moniker because it's become so cringe, especially in the online world, you know? But I understand it. I totally get, but I see both sides of the argument too. You know what I mean? With the COVID shit, it's been fucking brutal for people who want their just basic freedoms. You know what I mean? And so, and I tell people that I went from this last 2 years has taken me from, I want to educate you to get the fuck out of my way or else, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's really what happened. Yeah.
I think that is a valid response. What's the meme that was popular in 2020? Like, how did 2020 radicalize you? I think acronym, non-aggression principle, NAP or whatever. I remember after 2020, I was like, nah, fuck this.
Yeah, dude, it's you know, I still subscribe to the NAP, but I have to kind of grapple with myself at like, okay, how long ago did the government actually start violating the NAP, first of all? Mm-hmm. And when did they become the aggressors and we are allowed to defend ourselves? So that's kind of where I'm at, you know, and at what point are businesses aggressing on us? At what point are private individuals aggressing on us? I mean, at what point can you say, okay, it's time to start fighting back on some of this shit? And so I think that's the real big schism. You know, in the liberty movement at this point is a lot of people are like, no, we still have to wait till we were attacked and all this shit. And some people are like, nah, motherfucker, we've been being attacked for decades and centuries. You know what I mean? Like this. And I think that's where a lot of the schism is from. And of course, you can't really talk about this shit on social media very openly, or that you get removed and then the FBI will show up at your door and you can't fly and shit. It's really crazy, dude.
Yeah, for me, like private enterprise, like the moment you take any type of taxpayer money or government funding, whether that's subsidies or any type of federal money, you're no longer a private enterprise to me.
I agree.
And the non-aggression principle no longer applies.
smart man. I agree. And you know, that's kind of been the argument with the social media companies, especially. I mean, they really are an extension of the government at this point. I mean, they've taken so much money. They do so much work with the government. They go and speak to the Congress about how to run their platforms. And, you know, they go to these Senate committee hearings and talk about how to control their platforms. And it's like, at what point are they just a government entity? You know, well, it's become clear that they are, you know, the town square for us. That's where, you know, we do 90% of our communications are through social media now. I mean, that's really how it works. And they're working with the government to stifle us. At what point are they just an extension of the government? I don't know.
I mean, yeah, wasn't it Snowden back in 2012, 2011? He said that the Facebook is now just the shadowing of the NSA.
Oh yeah, and they are. I mean, they're giving your information to these people. If you say something they don't like, they report you, they remove you, they censor you, and they're working with the government. So how can you say that they're not just a government entity at this point? I mean, I really don't know how anybody can look at that and go, "It's private business, bro." I really don't get it.
Yeah, I think that's also why I've distanced myself from politics and been more interested in people who are doing things to actively get away from government's influence. So, like, I'm good friends with Vin and Control Pew, and like,
did you say like, Vin?
Yeah, Vin from Gatalog, or formerly
Vin Armani.
Vin Nguyen.
Oh, that's a different Vin.
Yeah, the 3D printed gun guys.
Oh, those guys are great. You know, I know who you're talking about now. Yeah.
And like Vin stayed at my house, and like that's part of, and 3D print general and stuff. Like these guys who are doing these things, like they're actually doing something about it. Like whether, like people have opinions of like what the value is, but I mean, dog, you're just arguing with people on Twitter. What are you doing?
Right. It's true. And that's what the most of us are doing, is just arguing on Twitter. You know, I've tried to work on policy, and I've worked with candidates, and I work in actual politics, which most people would say, that's why would you do that? It's stupid, you know, whatever. I get it. But I have done world work as well, but I do spend a lot of my time arguing on Twitter, man. And it's not beneficial at all.
Yeah.
But it's fun, though.
I don't know. Yeah, like in like a lot of the folks working and like building parallel institutions within the financial sector within crypto, like these people are building alternatives, whether or not they're prime or ready to be used, that's open to debate. But I mean, it's an alternative that's being built, and I think have my entire like online persona is like centered around just being the dude most people like and get along with, right? Because like for me, and this has always been true, like even when I worked on Ron Paul's campaign, like going out and having conversations with real people was always much more effective than reeing at people on the internet.
Oh, sure, absolutely. And there's no doubt about that. I worked on Ron Paul's campaign in 08 mm-hmm. as well, and I always talk about this on the show because it's like the highlight of my life. But Ron Paul endorsed me last year, 2020, for national chairman of the Libertarian Party. He actually he did like a 2-minute video on the Ron Paul report and put it out, and it was just like, huh, what? This is the pinnacle of my fucking life. It's true. I was working on his campaign in California. I mean, right outside of Oakland. I did it in 2008, and then I went and stumped for Ron Paul in 2012, like at the fucking Occupy Wall Street movement, like mm-hmm. So if you remember, Oakland was like the hub for that shit, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was down in the park in Oakland, like trying to get these leftists basically to understand the Federal Reserve and how the economy's tanking because of these policies, and how it's you know it's not communism that's the answer. You guys need to look to these free market policies. And I was, you know, I had people throwing eggs at me and shit and fucking.
But you were doing that too. I was down in McPherson Square during Occupy.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think I spent 3 days with those people, and then it kind of got a little too
it was hard,
gulagish. They were doing, I don't know if they were doing this on the West Coast, but they were doing like the jazz finger thing.
Yeah, I remember. It was something they did all over the country, dude.
Oh, God. It was interesting because like the moment Antifa started becoming like entered the headlines, like I recognized like the seeds of that my time with those.
It was the same people. It's the same fucking people. Exactly. They're just all 50 now and 40. You know what I mean? They're like school. They're like public school teachers and shit now with masks on, like fight, like burning down businesses and being like, we got to get communism in this country. It's like, well, whoa, dude, you're the people teaching our young, like fucking I'm homeschooling, dude. That's it.
Yeah.
Crazy to me, bro. Like that what was that fucking public school teacher that hit that guy with a bike lock? He was like,
that was like 3-4 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy, dude. Like that dude was a fucking public school teacher out there in an Antifa mask with a red and black flag hitting people with bike locks, dude. I'm like, this is the people teaching your kids. Fucking insane shit, dude. What's up, folks? Thanks for becoming a member for 3 months, man. He said DARPA's life log was shut down 244. Facebook was founded 244. Private business argument, BTFO. Okay, fair enough, dude. How do you feel about public parks, dude?
Public parks?
have you not seen the schisms going on Twitter lately?
No, I haven't.
Dude,
I haven't.
Dude, so go ahead. The two biggest arguments in Liberty Twitter right now are homeless people and sex work, right? Which are just, mm-hmm. it's like two fucking asinine things. Not like we have any way to affect this policy at all as libertarians. But so some people are saying that homeless people need to be physically removed from parks and shit because, you know, they're shitting in the parks, they're shitting on business doors and leaving heroin needles and shit everywhere. The other half's like, fuck that, don't call the cops, don't do this. Like, I get it, as anarchists, we don't want to fuck call the cops ever. Like, there's no reason for us to be calling the police. But, I mean, what's your take on that, man? What do you think we should do with the homeless? How do we fix the homeless situation?
I got no idea.
Nobody does, dude. That's why it's so stupid that we're all fucking arguing about it. Nobody really has a good solution to it.
Yeah, like that's initially what attracted me to anarchism, to be honest. It was the only political philosophy, and specifically anarcho-capitalism, like it was the only philosophy that it was like saying, I don't know, but I trust individuals over institutions to figure it out.
Right.
Like that's a logical answer to me. And this entire notion of like, you have to have a 30-second soundbite solution to every fucking complex problem that someone can parrot at you, like that's laughable.
Yeah.
And I think I don't know is a perfectly good answer. Like, and that's why I'm more interested in like thinking in frameworks versus having a 30-second soundbite policy prescription. Because frameworks are like in the engineering world, like we use a lot of frameworks, because they're extensible and they're reusable. They're not bespoke solutions to one-off problems, but they give you a lens to solve problems. And that is far more useful to me than trying to have an answer to every policy question that's the hot topic of the day, whether it's gun rights, abortion, or whatever. It doesn't matter. Like, for me, I'm just like, default to what maximizes individual liberty.
My two least favorite topics are immigration and abortion. I hate fucking talking about them, dude.
That's how I feel about all of them, to be honest with you.
Yeah, they all suck, but those two specifically are the biggest wedge in the liberty movement, and it's like none of us have any pull when it comes to the policy on those two issues at all. Mm-hmm. Zero. So it's like, especially libertarians, what the fuck can we do?
Yeah, but besides argue on Twitter, I think it was Brian Kaplan. Didn't he write an essay a few years ago on like a free market solution to the immigration problem? I met Brian a handful of times and went to a couple of his speeches, and like he had a very interesting. I don't remember what he said. I just remember being very impressed, and then going back to making money.
Sure,
that is more important to me than winning debates in a vacuum.
Yeah, I think Kaplan puts out some good stuff every once in a while. I'm not obviously not his biggest fan, but mm-hmm. and I'm also, you know, I'm one of those free immigration style libertarians, but I also understand the arguments about the welfare state, and you know, I totally empathize with Ellis Island style people. I empathize with people who don't want a ton more immigrants in this country. Like I empathize with everybody on the issue. And so I just don't ever fight over it. There's like no reason for me to fight over it whatsoever. It's one of those things where I see every side of the argument and go, I get it. That's cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like that's a shitty problem. I'd hate to have the job to fix it.
Yeah. Could you imagine being that guy? You know, like fuck, dude. Cause if I'll tell you, if I was ever put in a position to really affect immigration, that would basically mean that I've now won the presidency and I am actively abolishing every position in government. So, I mean, and that's where I'd be, you know what I mean? It's like I'd be using the Adam Kokesh, prescription basically is okay. I'm going to do one thing now that I'm president. I'm going to sign this executive order for the peaceful dissolution of the federal government. That's what I'm going to do now that I'm president. I'm going to be a president for 1 week. Then I'm going to terminate my position and it's all gone. And now the states can do whatever the fuck they want. I mean, that's really what I'd be doing, dude. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I have to divide my brain into like ideologically, yes, I'm an anarchist, but like, okay, how do you get there?
Right.
And then I start thinking about the actual logistics and mechanics of that ideology. And I'm just like, I don't want to deal with this.
Fair. No, it's one of those things, man. So let's move away from politics for a while since, you know, I'm like bringing you on anti-politics guy. Let's talk politics for an hour. No. Let's talk about hunting, man. When did you so you're a pretty avid hunter. You got some videos. I was watching one of your videos earlier about hunting feral hogs, which is it has like 65,000 views on YouTube or something, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. What got you into hunting? Is it just because you're from Texas and just what you guys do or what?
No, I don't know. It's the only activity where you could like when you're into guns, like you're shooting a lot of targets, you know what I mean? And my buddy Pickle always gives me shit for like shooting competitively or whatever. Yeah. Because, oh yeah, you're not getting shot back. And I'm like, yes, that's true.
But if I ever am getting shot back at, I'm going to know what the fuck I'm doing.
I mean, like, it's kind of like shadow boxing and working a bag versus being in a ring with a live opponent. Like there is certainly validity to that criticism, but it's also like, okay, well, how am I going to practice? Like, it's like basically like the practicality of Krav Maga. How are you going to safely drill, breaking someone's finger? Like,
right.
or like hitting someone in the dick. Like there's no real safe way to drill that. And it's a valid criticism.
Do you know, but I always equate Krav Maga to the self-defense trainer, like gun trainers online. It's like the same shit. Like, you know, these guys that are like, they're like, oh, all you have to do is put your hand in the slide. And it's like, motherfucker, I'm not doing that if somebody's got a gun pointed at my chest, dude. Like I'm gonna be like, yo, dude, here's my wallet. Here's everything. You know what I mean? Like, and then Krav Maga is like the same way. Look, all you gotta do is reach back and grab the guy by the balls and start, you know, and it's like, dude, that's not how you fight, man. It's not going to work that way.
Yeah. But to answer your question on like hunting and stuff, and I've talked to one of my buddies, Braxton, about this a lot. Like there's this big movement to sanitize hunting. And you see that with a lot of the nomenclature that people use. Like now it's in vogue, or at least it's been in vogue for a while, to say you harvested an animal.
Right.
That's bullshit, dog. Like, no, I killed that motherfucker. I killed it with a T. Right. and like a lot of folks, and you see a lot of people doing a lot of this theater where they're acting remorseful about killing things. And I'm just like, and then people get mad at me also on YouTube because I don't eat every feral hog. I'm like, dog, I killed 68 hogs in the month of December. Like, yeah. You want me to eat all of them?
That's a lot of fucking sausage, dude.
and there's a lot of mythology about like how feral hogs taste, and I've perpetuated some of that too, to be honest. But like it's just fun. Like it's fun to deny the fact that going out into the woods and shooting something is fun is to deny your fucking DNA,
right?
and like I think a lot of hunters are put themselves on the defensive by trying to sanitize things and remove the killing from the equation and making it more diluted.
It's a ritual, bro.
Yeah.
I like, give thanks to the animal.
And like my buddy Braxton, like he's been hunting way longer than I have. And I actually was out hunting with him 2 weeks ago. Oh, and nice. I missed on two coyotes, for the record. I learned the limits of distance for myself through a thermal scope.
Oh, nice.
But like, yeah, he's been hunting much longer than I have. We've talked about this, and like it's he has his own opinions on it, and I think we're pretty similar. I don't want to speak for him, but yeah, it's really sad to see folks just sanitizing what's happening. Right. What's that book, Meditations on Violence? I think where we've removed ourselves via logistics in the supply chain from like where food actually comes from, and like now we think of meat as a product that comes saran wrapped at the grocery store, and now like any act of violence for whether it's predator removal or pest removal or even for food, like we've made it into something that we should be ashamed of and hide. And I think that's total silliness. Bullshit, and that's one of the things I like doing. I like taking people, and like what I do is very different from what people in the Rocky Mountains do. Like hunting in the Rocky Mountains is very different from hunting in Texas.
True.
I would say it's definitely more difficult in the Rocky Mountains, but like in Texas, like 96% of the land is privately owned. So like we've got like 10,000 acre ranches, and a lot of it's like a lot of the terrain wants to quite frankly kill you. Right. So like going out and walking around, I don't know. I'm going to patrol in my truck a little bit. And then once I pick some heat up 600 yards away, I'm going to walk in. I'm not trying to climb through a bunch of thorns and shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you do have the luxury of it being really flat in Texas, which is an important part. We have that same luxury here in Iowa. And I was telling you before the show, I've actually never been hunting in my life.
Let's change that.
Yeah. It's something that now that I live in Iowa, I have some friends who hunt, and I'm like, yo, I want to go hunt. And they hunt year round in Iowa. Right. So there's like three different seasons. There's bow hunting season. There's like some kind of gun season and some other kind of gun season. And it's like, it's all different. Right. So there's dudes here that go and set in the fucking snow blind in like negative or in a deer blind in like negative 25 degrees for like 10 hours, dude, with a fucking bow and arrow to hunt you know, elk, and they do have great, mm-hmm. I mean, some of the best deer in the country are in Iowa, you know what I mean? And so, it's something that I really want to do, but at the same time, I don't want to do the cold weather hunting. I don't think I could set in a deer blind for 10 hours and fucking negative 20 degree weather. I don't know if I could do that, but hog hunting is something that I've always wanted to do because I have, I was telling you before the show as well, I got a buddy that I grew up around, Troy Davis, who's the manliest dude I've ever met in my life. He's got mm-hmm. some government-owned marshland in California that's overrun with feral hogs, and he's got like these exclusive rights to hunt there with his team, and they're not allowed to use guns. And so they armor these fucking chase dogs, dude, and the dogs like chase the hogs into the tules on this marshland and corner them, and they have to come in and like stab these hogs, dude. Mm-hmm. It's and he's told me stories. He's like riding on the fucking hog's face, like holding onto its tusk. He's like, oh, I almost got killed by this you know, this fucking hog. And I'm like, Jesus, dude, that's insane. So you know, if I could shoot them, that'd be a lot cooler, I think.
Yeah, hunting hogs with dogs, I try not to judge anybody's approach because I don't know everything, but the dogs can get fucked up.
Oh, really? Fuck. He's had his dog like stitched up and all kinds of shit, man. But yeah. The toughest dog ever in the history of the world, too, probably. Though, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know a lot of folks here use. I think they use mastiffs here, sure. Which are like war dogs.
Oh yeah, yeah. English mastiff's the biggest dog in the. I mean, they're literally the biggest dog in the world. I think English mastiff.
Yeah. I've seen a handful. I would not want to fight a mastiff. But yeah, like you mentioned, like blinds and stuff. That's another petty argument in the hunting community, like whether hunting from a blind counts. And like me personally, I don't hunt in blinds, mostly sure. because I fall asleep.
Right.
but like you were saying, in Iowa, it's negative 10 degrees. Like, I'm not going to judge a dude for sitting in a blind. Yeah. I don't want to be in that either.
Fuck no. And if you start falling asleep in negative 20 degrees, you might want to get to your vehicle because you're probably getting hypothermia, dude. Like, you're probably on your way to dying, you know what I mean? So, I mean, you your Twitter bio says you're the Bob Ross of gun Twitter. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite gun, man?
Oh man, that's like asking
who's your favorite child?
that's like asking Big Daddy Kane what his favorite girl is. Right, I don't right. know.
or me, who my favorite child is. I got seven of them, so it's yeah, know, one of those things. Wow. I'm not allowed to do that, dude. You know what I mean?
Congratulations, thanks, that's a lot of kids.
I didn't make them all. I didn't make them all. We adopted two and. We had one together and then she had two. And so it's kind of a his mine and ours kind of thing, but it's
no, that's awesome. A lot of kids. That's awesome. That's awesome. That's something I've been looking into also. As far as guns go, it depends, like rifle, pistol. I mean, I would say platform is probably the easiest. Like sure. I'm a pretty basic bitch. Like give me an AR-15. I'm happy. I have been playing around with a lot of AKs lately. I have a lot of guns and I go through a lot of guns. I write for Guns America also. Clay Martin got me a job writing gun reviews for them.
For Gun Owners of America?
Guns America.
Oh, nice.
Okay. Yeah, they're like an online gun review blog or whatever. They're one of the big ones.
Is it one of those companies that's constantly sending me emails like every 30 minutes?
No. I think it's Firearms Policy Coalition. I love those guys, but I had to unsubscribe from their email campaigns.
Dude, it never fucking stop. Literally every 20 minutes, I'm like, another one? Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, like, for me, I think it's harder for me to, or it's easier for me to answer, like, what guns don't I like? And right. There's only one gun I don't like, and that's the Ruger LCP, that little pocket carry guy. I hate shooting that thing.
Hey, you didn't say a 1911, so that's cool.
Yeah, yeah, like for me, I've shot really expensive 1911s and I've shot really basic 1911s. Like, you get to a point when you've shot enough and owned enough guns where like you just like them. Like right. that's another thing I avoid on Twitter, or I'm not as good at avoiding it on Twitter, but like gear, like I'm not interested in like gear arguments and shit. Like a lot of dudes on Twitter, especially gun Twitter, like to like create these hypothetical scenarios where like they need every base covered. I'm just like, dude, like I'm a suburban ranch hand. I ain't trying to be knocking in doors or anything.
Yeah. See, I've never been like a gun guy, 'cause I come from a place where you own guns to protect yourself. We're not hunters. I mean, nobody's hunting in Oakland, California. And if they are, you better lock your fucking doors. Right. Like that's how it works. Right. It's a bad place. And so people own guns to protect themselves. And I've always appreciated it. I had a Kimber Pro Carry 2. I get called a fucking FUD on it online all the time because I said I had a Kimber, but it was a good fucking gun. I never had any problems with it. People are always talking about it. They jam. I'm like, I put a lot of fucking ammo downrange on that weapon, and it was fine. I never had any jams. I never had any problems with it. It was a cool gun. I have big ass hands, so I like 45s. You know what I mean? Like huge hands. Hi, kids. Do you like
violence? Are you sick to death of pussyfooting around the truth while being constantly fed lies by news and big tech tyrants? If so, then come join me, Dan Smotz, on The System Is Down, where we get weird, have fun, and dig into all the dangerous taboo topics like conspiracies, politics, religion, culture, current events, and everything your family just prays you don't bring up around the Thanksgiving dinner table. And I know that reality is scary to some people, so if you're easily offended, just ignore this and go back to making cat memes or whatever. But if you're ready to change the world for the better, come join me on The System Is Down at tsidpod.com or wherever you get podcasts. That's tsidpod.com, because the system is down and truth is taking over.
I can't carry these little tiny Glock 40s and shit. They're tiny, you know what I mean?
Yeah, my hands are dainty and made for typing and tweeting, so.
I have like these fucking monster hands, and so I like big guns, and but I people talk shit about me all the time for having 1911s and enjoying 1911s. I actually switched over to Glock. I ended up getting a Glock 21 Gen 4 and it, you know, nice big gun. It's Glock. It's good. It worked. It was really well, but it just didn't feel the same as a 1911. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So. It's got a very different grip angle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like for me, like I just like guns. Like I've got $2,000 rifles and I've got a $130 Rocky Mountain High Point, nice. Heritage Rough Rider.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong. Hey, look, a high point will do, you know, just what you need it to do. I'm sure. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And like for me, like I just like taking new people out shooting and shit. Like I've got a lot of ammo and stuff, and so I just give it away and let people shoot their first gun for the first time. And what I found, like, and like I don't shoot indoors or anything. I've got a couple different outdoor facilities around me, and what I found actually works the best, particularly on Californians, isn't taking them to like these courses of fire, like with huge bays where you can kind of set up your own little shooting obstacle course, but taking them long range shooting, the first time I've taken like hard left anti-gunners out, and like as soon as they hit a steel plate at like 300 500 600 yards, like that's when the hooks get in.
And they're like, that was fun, that was a lot of fun. Yeah.
And I've had like Bay Area people who are like vehement Bernie Sanders people, and like they're just like, yo, I think I low-key like guns, dog.
Yeah, this is kind of empowering. I enjoy this a little bit, you know. And it's funny because when I, you know, before I lived in Portland, Oregon for 7 years. I moved up there from California in 2012, and I had never like really gone shooting prior to that. I had owned guns. I had guns for protection, and I had shot it a couple times. But then I moved to Portland, Oregon, and they had this place called Defense. Fuck, I'm going to forget the name of it now. But it had a range that we'd go, and you could rent all the guns. And, you know, I fucking shot a SCAR for my first time there and all this cool shit. And but they had this 360-degree, like, virtual training area, and they had these Glocks that had like laser on them, and they had CO2 cartridges in them, and you could like train for all these different situations, man. And that, it changed my life and my outlook when it came to guns. I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. I enjoy this culture. You know what I mean? This is way more fun than I thought it was going to be. Now I live in Iowa where you can just own whatever the fuck you want, you know? And it's like, okay, I need to get more involved in this. But I'm also, you know, I've been like pricing 3D printers because I think that that's really, I think it's a really important step in the gun rights culture, I guess you could call it. I mean, I know you're pretty into the 3D printed stuff as well. What 3D printer would you tell me I should get?
So just to be clear, like I'm tangential to the 3D printed gun sure. community. Like I wouldn't say I'm a member of it. I'm friends with the guys who are, but I'm more of a cheerleader from the traditional gun world. Sure. I've done a few prints, tested a few out, and like it's fascinating how far that technology has come. And I remember when Cody Wilson came out with the Liberator. Gun. Yeah, the Liberator 380, I think, and where we've gone from there to now we've got like Gatalog putting out AR-10s that are 3D running on 3D printed lowers. Like that's an exponential leap from where we were just a few years ago.
I saw someone doing 3D printed like ammo jackets the other day.
Yeah, that was the guys at Atlas Arms, I think, and
it
then
was Atlas.
Suckboy Tony also, he's working on it.
Crazy.
Yeah, it detonates a primer via electricity. It's pretty cool. They're actually doing stuff. And like I want that's like my whole thing. Like I don't want to argue about things on the internet. I want to encourage people to do things. Right. And like I'm just a big cheerleader for anyone who's doing something productive with their life.
You are extremely we just got a super chat from Level Zero, $2. He said, "Hush is the man. Always makes me laugh on Twitter." You do. I mean, you're funny on Twitter, but you're also like super positive and uplifting. You're never like a dick to people, which I think is a really important thing. It's probably why you have 100,000 followers, dude.
No, that was the feet pictures.
and the trap house posting.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like a lot of people, I'm very open about this, about my Twitter following, and it's also probably part of why I'm being punished by Twitter. Which I mean, it's kind of deserved, but like for the first, I joined in 2009, and like from 2009 to 2016, I'd say my Twitter account was just a bot. Like it was an engineering experiment to me. So like if you go to my profile, you see I'm following 68,000 people. Sure. I've liked 300,000 posts or whatever. Dog, I ain't got time to sit there and do that with my phone. Like, and so like Twitter for me was just a hustle. I was selling retweets on Fiverr for like $5 a piece. I made like $3,000-$4,000 in one summer off of selling retweets.
That's
mostly
crazy.
Like weed company. Yeah, Fiverr got some pressure from Twitter and they had to take it off. So like my Twitter account like was really just me automating a bunch of shit. Like I don't hide that. And then I started like posting stuff once in a while and I'd be like, oh, this is kind of fun.
Twitter is so much fun, dude. I had a Twitter for like I want to say I started my Twitter in 2017 and I had about 12,000 followers in the beginning of 2020, and I had never really used it, dude. Like mm-hmm. I had put out, you know, I was running for chairman of the national committee and I had put out some tweets here and there, but I was so entrenched in Facebook, right? And then Facebook removed me October of 2020, completely took mm-hmm. me off the platform for daring to mention that maybe this virus was made in a lab in Wuhan, China, which is kind of like the fucking approved narrative now. And yeah. So they removed me off Facebook, wouldn't let me have another one. I started another Facebook from a different email and different phone. They, within 6 hours, had taken that one down. It was like they knew it was me, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I was like, well, I guess I'll go fucking try out Twitter, dude. And it was just, it's so much fun. It's like a war zone, dude.
Yeah, it's got the steepest learning curve, but it's also once you get a hang of it, it's also the equivalent of like black tar heroin.
Dude, you can't stop, bro. It's so fun. When I got my recent Twitter removed, dude, it was a sad experience for me, bro. I was like, dude, seriously? That was my whole following, you motherfuckers. Like, dude, you just took my whole shit from me. All I did was say the word death. That's it. One word.
Yeah, that's right. Everybody telling me
one
that.
Fucking word, dude. I and it was in response to that. You know, those people that that college professor that was trying to normalize the term MAPS or minor attractive persons. And I tried to explain to Twitter, like I was just simply having a conversation about capital punishment for people who harm children in that way. You know what I mean? And they denied my appeal. But then my friend Mike told me that you can write to the Better Business Bureau in San Francisco, right? And they will force Twitter to have a manual review with an actual human instead of a bot. So I did that. And I just got a fucking response from Twitter saying we need the incident number and we're going to look into it. So hopefully I may get my account back. I have a couple people, Mike Harlow, who's been on the show. I have a couple people I know that have actually gotten their account back for doing way worse shit than I did. So it maybe works. So if you guys are getting kicked off Twitter, write the Better Business Bureau in San Francisco, man, online. It's crazy.
I had no idea the Better Business Bureau actually did anything.
Yeah, dude. So Twitter is such a huge company that any bad marks from the Better Business Bureau, they don't want any bad marks from them. And so if you get kicked off Twitter and you ask for an appeal, that appeal never goes to a live person, almost ever. Yeah. You know what I mean? It goes to some automated bot that like scans your page and goes, no, sorry. Right. But if the Better Business Bureau emails them, they're, you know, whatever division handles complaints and says, hey, we have this person who's writing us saying you guys arbitrarily removed him for saying one word. He didn't violate any terms of service. He feels like you guys I feel like Twitter is targeted harassment on me for my political views. Right. That's what I said, because they kicked me off for targeted harassment for saying the word death. Right. And so I kind of turned it back around on them. And so they have gotten my write-up and they've responded and now they're looking further into the issue. So I could possibly get my account back. I don't know.
I hope it works out, man.
Dude, it hurt my heart, bro. It was so much fun.
Yeah. Like for me, like Twitter, I'm just like, what would I do for validation?
it's where, you know, look, I got 7 kids. I work a full-time job and I do the show. That's my whole life. Outside of that, I don't have any friends. I try to tell people on this show is when I get to hang out with my friends every night. That's it. You know what I mean? And so like Twitter was like, that was my spot, man. I felt, you know, I felt good there. People validated me every day there, man.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like I've been on for how many years? Is that 12 now? Almost 13. And like, I've seen so many permutations of many different communities like come up and go away. Like I remember Liberty Twitter 8 years ago was, I don't recognize anyone.
Oh, it's so much different. It's the movement's growing. That's why. I mean, really, you know, this, especially during COVID. I mean, if you can really live through the last 2 years and not go, you know, maybe the government's not the best institution in the world. You might not be paying much attention. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, like gun Twitter, crypto Twitter. Like I've been stuck in this crack house for over a decade now, and like it's really interesting, the personalities, because there are always the same types of personalities that rise to the top, and then like something happens and they go away, and that you never hear. Like I've got friends from 2016, 2017, when like I think probably crypto Twitter was probably what I was most known for back then.
Crypto Twitter is such a fucking mess now.
Oh, dude, yeah. Like me and some of the OG folks from back in the day, like we've got like a DM group chat and like we're joking about like what crypto Twitter's turned into. And it used to be a fun place, but
it's ugly now.
I have no idea what it is anymore.
It's 90% bots.
Yeah, that was always kind of a problem, but it definitely seems to be more prominent now. So like now, like people have my phone number, so like we just talk that way.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's fucking, it's insane. But Liberty Twitter is a mess too, man. It's constant fights. But I mean, that's kind of how the Liberty sphere has always been. It's always been an argument about ideas, and that's how the ideas have evolved. And so I get it, I understand it. I'm not at all mad about it, but it's like sometimes I'm just like, Jesus, dude. I said one thing today and people just, I mean, it came unglued on me. It was like I said, sex work should be legal, but I wouldn't be proud of my kids if they were sex workers. You know what I mean? Like, that's how I feel about the situation. I think that's a pretty moderate position. You know what I mean? I don't think that it's a normal job. I mean, it can be work and you can make money, and I don't think you should go to jail or be prosecuted for it. But I wouldn't be comfortable telling my kids, hey, I'd be super proud of you if you, you know, took dick for money. I believe that means it's not a normal job. I mean, that we know that there's some kind of moral stigma around sex work, and, you know, and more power to you if you're a sex worker. Congratulations. I'm glad you're hustling, making that money, doing something good for yourself. I think it's a bad decision, and I'm allowed to say that and still think that it should be legal. But I mean, what do you think, man? How do you feel about sex workers, bro?
But what if I was a sex worker, Josh?
Oh shit! Well, there's a lot of people. There's a lot of people in the chat. There's a lot of people in the chats asking you to show hams, bro, or yams.
Oh yeah, they want to see the yams. Yeah.
So if they show the yams, we might get paid, bro. You know what I mean?
I mean, like, I don't know. Like, that's that line of work is so far removed from anything that impacts me.
Right.
Like I would probably say what you said is probably how I feel. Like I wouldn't present that my children as a viable career,
right.
career path. But if they went that direction, yeah, I probably wouldn't be happy about it.
Yeah, it's not like it's not gonna be like it's not gonna be like, oh sweetie, I'm so proud of you for taking loads for money. Congratulations, I'm so proud.
Yeah.
I got in the house, I got four daughters. You know what I mean? It's like, dude, I don't want any of them to become sex workers. I want them to become engineers and fucking, you know, my 17-year-old's going to, I'm very proud of her for this, actually. She's doing a summer internship at John Deere to become a welder, right?
My 17. That's awesome.
Yeah, she's like, you know, she's kind of like, Dad, is it weird that I think I might want to be a welder? I'm not at all, sweetie. Like, trust me, it's going to be way better for you financially than going to college. Trust me, I know. I've done both. I went to college and I've been in trade work for, you know, the majority of my life. And I make more money in the trades than I ever would with the degrees I was trying to go for at the time. You know what I mean? And I said, yeah, it's like a male driven sphere in welding. Obviously you're not going to meet a whole lot of other women who are doing this professionally, but mm-hmm. If you can carve out a space for yourself to do it, the men are going to respect the shit out of you for doing it. And you're going to make a ton of fucking money doing it. Especially if you're a good welder, you can make a lot of money, dude.
That was the one thing I did at the Cato Institute. This was before, like now it's like trendy to talk about how much money you can make in the trades, but sure. This was 2011, 2012. Like I put together an op-ed breaking down like the cost benefit analysis. And I did a, not discounted cash flow model, but I built a model of basically path one of, okay, you take on student loans, you sacrifice 4 years of work getting paid to go get educated, and then what's your median salary expectations getting out at a normal cost of living place. And like I broke down like what an elevator mechanics make bang.
Especially in the union, dude. The union elevator mechanics, I mean they're making double what I make and I'm comfortable, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this was 10 years ago. I can only imagine the numbers have gone up significantly since then.
Insane, dude. Insane.
And you're looking at the opportunity cost also of sacrificing 4 years of earning power that could be going towards starting a business or setting up a passive income, things of that nature. And like 10 years ago, it was glaringly obvious to me that it only made sense to go to college for very specialized disciplines. I would say that's still true today, probably even more so true. But that's one thing I am. I'm open about like what I do for a living. Like I'm a professor as a side job. It's not my main job, but it is one of my jobs. And like I've seen in the last 5 years, 4 years or so, a steep decline in the quality of students. And like like most things, you could trace it back to government money and loose monetary policy.
Subsidizing, like, dude.
Yeah, there's artificially increasing demand by making these cheap student loans so easy to get. Now you've incentivized colleges to spend that money and lower their standards to get as much of that sweet, sweet government cheese.
Yeah, you're bringing in kids that have no shot of graduating college. None.
Oh, yeah.
Zero. You're like, you should not be here. No, someone, it's like American Idol, dog, right? You mm-hmm. see some of the auditions for American Idol and you're like, why didn't your family tell you not to fucking go do that? You know what I mean? Like, and I feel that way. I know that's like harsh or whatever, but like I told my daughter directly, I'm like, look, you're probably not going to go to college. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. She didn't go to school from the time she was supposed to be a freshman until just now when she was 16. And now she's trying to play catch up and graduate before the summer so she can do this internship. And I said, look, let's be honest. You hated school. You didn't go to school for a lot of years. You know what I mean? You weren't made to go to school or do any kind of education. You're probably not going to go to college. It's probably not your thing. Why don't you look into some of this trade work where you can make a lot of money? And she's excited about it. And I think that more parents need to do that with their kids. I think that it's the responsible thing to do. It might be harsh, but I have seven kids. I doubt all seven of them are going to be cut out for college. Some of, you know, one of my sons might be an electrician and make more money than some first year physicians. You know what I mean? Like that's the truth. That's absolutely the truth, you know? And physicians go to school for 10 years, dude.
Yeah, you know? It's and they're paying back those loans for 15, 30 years after. And
dude, yeah, fuck that.
Yeah, I mean, like, and I'm one of those people that's not super debt averse. Like, debt's a tool. You can use it responsibly or irresponsibly. But I would say the majority of students aren't even in a cognitive plane to be able to determine whether or not their career choice and education choice is an intelligent use of debt.
Right, right, exactly. Thanks for the super chat, $2 super chat, Ben Heckman. He says, pheasant hunting with a dog is the best hunting. You do pheasant hunting? Is that something you've ever done?
I actually never shot birds. I've pretty much, to be honest with you, like I've, as far as hunting goes, hogs and predators are pretty much all I've done. I've shot one whitetail last year. I don't know, deer are kind of dumb. And yeah, I don't know. I was always more attracted to like, this sounds weird now that I said attracted. I was always more drawn to hunting more.
There's laws against that kind of stuff, buddy.
More dangerous game.
Yeah, no, I get that. I think, you know, as far as deer goes, it'd just be because I have a big family and I actually enjoy venison. So it'd be like, you know, one of those things for me where it's like, okay, I get to feed my family with something that I killed and I enjoy the meat. So that'd be cool. But hog hunting does sound like the most fun, man. It really does sound good time, dude.
I'm out shooting these pigs probably every other weekend and during the winter months. So if you ever make it down to Texas and it's cold outside, let me know and we'll put you on some hogs.
Yeah, dude. I mean, I think I could drive to Texas in 10 hours. Most, you know, at least the eastern part of Texas for sure. I know I can make it to Arkansas from here in 9 hours, so I'm sure I can get to Texas around the same amount of time. But that's where my daughter and her two siblings that we adopted were in Arkansas when we went and picked them up last year. So I drove down there to pick them up, and then I drove back down there for court, like overnight, went straight to court, won custody, and came driving right back. So like 20 hours of driving. It was pretty cool though, man. But yeah, I definitely want to get down. I'd come to Texas. I enjoy Texas. I'm also a Dallas Cowboys fan, so I don't know how far you are from Dallas, but
yeah. And with hogs, a lot of people are out there sitting in blinds with like flashlights, like green or red flashlights. Nah, we'll be out there. We'll be out there slapping them with thermal. So it'll be cool.
That'd be really cool, dude. The thermal would be fucking cool. I have a buddy. It's funny we're talking about welding. I have a buddy who right out of high school became a welder. Then he got into the Boilermakers Union, and he was 19 years old, bought a house. He had like two trucks, a Harley, fucking all this shit. At 19, he wasn't even able to go to the bar yet, and he had all this money because he became a welder. But he used to go out to like illegal hog hunts in California, and they did like these feed piles and shit. And then he'd go out in the middle of the night and hunt these hogs, dude. And it was he was pretty wild. He's a big tweaker now, unfortunately, but it made sense that was the direction he was going, to be honest. But My fiance is in the chat. She says, we will not be eating hogs, but I'm sure my daughter will get us a deer this year. She doesn't eat pork. I love like a feral, like wild hogs is some of my favorite meat. My buddy who used to hunt them in California, he'd take them and get them processed into like breakfast sausages and jerky and bacon and all. It was like the best fucking, way better than the shit you could buy at the store, dude. I mean, it's not even close, you know?
Yeah, it really depends on like what they've been eating, to be honest with you. Like, I've seen some nasty hogs in my time, and I've had some hogs processed that taste just like the store.
Right, just really depends. Probably depends on what they're eating, mostly, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Like, and they usually in the colder months they're a little more desperate because food kind of dries up, so they start eating some questionable stuff. I remember one time I busted a cap in a hog a couple years ago, and it was covered in mud, and I went to drag it out, and I get back into the side by side, and I'm like, what smells like shit? And like I look down at my hand, and I think it's covered in mud, and I smell my hand, and I'm like, no, it's covered in shit.
Jesus, dude, it happens, bro.
Yes, it was bad. That was probably the nastiest hog I've ever it was absolutely covered, like it was like a mud man hog.
That's, but
it
was so dookie. That's so crazy. Shout out to Marshall Ford for the $5 super chat. Thanks, brother. And Citizen Hush with the $5. Did you really drop a super chat while you're on the show, dude?
I think someone called it Inception earlier.
Nice, dude. I think the only other person that's ever done that on this show, I think, is Michael Bolton, dude. You know, are you familiar with Michael Bolton?
Michael Bolton, actor?
No, not the actor singer. No, Michael Bolton is the founder and president of the 10th Amendment Center. He's one of the coolest guys in the whole entire world, man. Like nobody is as knowledgeable when it comes to like the Constitution and the founders and nullification, and fucking the man is just, he's the one who worked on like the Defend the Guard legislation and all that shit. He actually works on policy and bills for legislators. Really cool guy, man. But he's also like one of my best friends. So
that's cool,
brother. We're getting to the end of the public live stream. I've had a blast here. This was one of the coolest freeform conversations I've had in a long time, dude. We just rolled. It was great.
Yeah, dude, it's a lot of fun. Always good talking to like-minded people.
Yeah, absolutely. Where can all my my viewers watch you, listen to you, follow you, support you, all that great stuff, brother?
Yeah, for sure. So I've got a YouTube channel under the same name, Citizen Hush. It's kind of like a variety show. It's a lot of hog hunting, a lot of shooting, and then occasional interviews. I'm going to be ramping up the podcast side, and then on Twitter, Citizen Hush. Actually, I think on all platforms, I'm just Citizen Hush.
Nice. Well, brother, I appreciate you. I'm a big fan. If you could just give me like a couple minutes to close out the public stream, we'll start the members only stream.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
All right, brother. All right, guys, another awesome episode of Break the Cycle. Citizen Hush is so cool. Go follow him, check him out. He's not a bot on Twitter anymore. So he, you actually get the man, the myth, the legend himself when you're on Twitter. I was checking out his YouTube channel over the last couple of days. It's pretty cool stuff. I hope he does bring back the podcast. It's fun. I'd be a fan of going on. He does like a 10 questions podcast that sounds like it'd be a good time. I saw someone drop in the chat. Let's see. Where did it go? Oh, did you delete it? Oh yeah, Reardon, you deleted it. He was saying there's people in certain parts of the world that don't eat pork. That's true, but my fiance doesn't eat it for she thinks they're dirty animals and that you can get worms from them and shit. She's very health conscious and all about natural stuff and anti-parasites, and so that's why she doesn't eat it. My family is from Israel on my dad's side. But I still eat pork like a motherfucker because I love shit. So I couldn't live without bacon, man. There's just no way, or sausage or any of that stuff, man. So, but yeah, great show. Definitely go check out Citizen Hush. Go check out my sponsors, toplops.com, the man, the myth, the legend, my good friend and partner on Break the Cycle, where you can get this great dark sunrise synthwave Break the Cycle hoodie that you see me wearing tonight by using BTC at checkout for a 10% discount. Or you guys can go get all of his great designs that he's got on ugly Christmas sweaters. I think if you order them right now, you can still get them before Christmas. He's got some really cool ones, man. Definitely cool stuff. I'll be ordering. He's got a Rothbard Hate the State ugly Christmas sweater that I'll be ordering tomorrow so that I can wear on a couple of shows during Christmas time, because we're going to go all out dorky on Christmas. I know you guys are going to hate it, but I don't give a fuck. I'm going to change the intro and everything. It's going to be all Christmased out for you guys. I got 7 kids, so I really enjoy Christmas time, man. It's a good time for me. But go over to Top Lobster, check him out. If you guys want to get a bigger discount, you can go check out my Patreon and Subscribestar. Both of those are the website.com/BreakTheCycleJS. You guys can get all kinds of cool perks over there. You can also join the YouTube channel under all my videos and become a member there. All three of those things let you see the exclusive content, but also get you into a private Discord server where you can get all of Top Lops' gear up to 2 weeks before they go to the general public at like a 30% discount. He's also got a Patreon too that he's got all kinds of cool swag on. You can get your own portrait of you drawn without having to come on my show. You can get all kinds of cool backgrounds for your phone. He does all kinds of different things on his Patreon. It's pretty cool. So go check him out on Top Lobster at Patreon as well. And of course, check out our executive producers, anthemplanning.com, for all your emergency and crisis planning needs. Check them out today. See what they can do for your business, home, or personal life. They're doing a wonderful job that the government has historically sucked at, much cheaper and much more efficiently. Seriously, if you own a business, right after you become a member of this YouTube channel, come watch the members only stream. Go check them out. You won't be disappointed. They're going to do something good for your business, I promise you. Guys, I have no more shows this week. I got some good shows lined up next week. I will have a almost full schedule next week, Tuesday through Friday. I don't get home till Monday from Boston. Like I said in the beginning, if you guys are in the Boston area, I'll be there tomorrow night, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, and then I'll be in Baltimore, Maryland, Sunday night. My flight leaves at like 5:30 a.m. on Monday morning from Baltimore. So if you're in either of those two places, you want to hang out, get a hold of me on Twitter. I'd love to meet up with you guys and enjoy some time there. I'll see you on Tuesday for another show with Slow News Day. But until then, don't forget to break the cycle.
Due to legal reasons, I just have to explain. The lyrics of my last song may seem to contain a violent call to action in the verse and refrain. But I just landed in Minecraft. The helicopter.
your bar was in reference to GTA 5 and the things you do. So any violence you commit, I am not an excuse, because I just meant it in Minecraft. But Chipper is my friend and he's constantly cold. Accusations of incitement getting totally old. Make your own choices, yeah, you have control, because I just meant it in Minecraft. Obviously, I would never advocate force, unless it's due process and a trial, of course. And if you're convicted, we will make you a corpse in Minecraft, just in Minecraft. You're nothing I mean, you know it. Your product dinners, 'cause it closed for COVID. Holy shit, I think I'm